We are on lecture 8. This is the light of presence in covenant. So we're talking about presence today. Let's review quickly and see how well we do. Without looking, tell us of covenant.
Right relationships.
Purpose of covenant.
Revelation.
Of God's
character.
God's character or person, which is
King.
Holy. God's
position,
which is
King.
And God's
power,
which is
source
of life. Okay. And so in that, we talked about the fact that he is holy. That means he's with us and he'll shield and defend us, right? Because he wants us to be in that perichoretic union. And remember that he's defending us. He's defending our image bearing. He's defending our treasured possessions. He's defending us being holy people. He's not defending our right to have a nice home and a comfortable life. The position, God's position as king, means he'll be attentive to our needs as regents, which means that we follow in the king's footsteps as far as what? What does the king, what's the king mostly concerned about? Two things.
Justice and righteousness.
So righteousness is being the model of a right relationship with God, and justice is?
What's right for all.
Good. So
supplying every need.
Yes. So it's making sure that there's a space for everybody to feel like they belong and they're safe, right? So that's that big idea of king and space really have a lot to do with one another. And he'll defend that space against injustice, against people feeling less than others, so that there's everyone recognizes themselves as image bearers and one another as image bearers. And because he is the source of life, his power, means he'll be gracious to supply life to us continually. And we'll talk about that for the next couple weeks to come. The basis of covenant.
Grace.
Which is?
Hesed.
And hesed is?
Love.
Loving kindness. So when we say love, we have such a skewed view of what love is. We always want to say loving kindness, which has the word in it, kin, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. So think about, in fact, you could just say kindness. And think about the word kin. So hesed is treating one another as kin. And then emet is?
Faithfulness
or vulnerability, transparency, right? openness. So the movement of covenant.
Progressive.
Each phase builds on the previous and then informs the next phase. The three categories of the practices of covenant.
Signs.
Sacrifice. And solemn.
Good. So signs, tell me. The first three signs we talked about, and then we'll go through the rest.
Robes,
which signify
exchanging identity
or status. Yes.
Weapons,
exchanging
defense.
And
belt.
Exchanging strength. Okay. Some of the other practices. Can you name some of the other practices that we talked about just briefly?
The practices for covenant.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about like
commingling
blood. Commingling of blood. These are all sharing life.
Walking through.
Having a meal together.
Mm-hmm. Names.
Naming.
Sharing names. Yes. Sharing identities.
Friendship.
Yep.
Meals.
I think that's it. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Sacrifices is a picture of
dying to self,
right? So that you can participate in God's life. Not your independent life, but in God's perichoretic life. And the solemn oath is a promise with collateral, right? Which, because we have to understand how serious covenant is. Mm-hmm. That it's a vow to call for what?
Death.
Whose death?
My death.
Your own death, if I break covenant, right? Okay. So that's kind of where we've been with covenant. Today we are going to talk about presence. So as I've been thinking about presence, last night I just laid in bed over and over again thinking, just in a normal day, normal life, how important presence is of people, how important it is for others to show up in your life, right? And I began thinking through my life growing up, and most of you know I had a very young mother. She was married at 15. She had me at 16. She divorced at 17. So at 17, she had two children, divorced. Remember, in a time and culture that was appalling, right? Appalling to be divorced, appalling to have children at that age. All of it was just appalling. And so, obviously, I mean, how many of you have teenagers right now? Think of them having a child right now. Yeah, you work with enough of them, right? And I began thinking, so God, where was presence in my life? I mean, God has been working in each of our lives all the way through, from birth on. And remember I told you that, you know, I didn't ever feel like I belonged in my immediate family. And yet God began to reveal to me last night, Jill, I brought you presents all over. And here's an interesting thing. So my mom was the only girl. She had two brothers. But my grandmother, because my grandmother had her first at 18, my grandmother was one of seven. And so all of her brothers and sisters, I considered my aunts and uncles. So in reality, they were my great aunts and uncles, but I still called them aunts and uncles. That's who they were. And I began thinking about the presence of my aunts and uncles in my life. And it overwhelmed me last night to realize what was going on. I never knew this. So I had one aunt who actually was supposed to, they had considered adopting both of them, both me and my sister. They were wealthy. They had the money to do that. They had two kids of their own. But because of that, we spent a lot of time at their house. I remember as kids, they actually had a maid who took care of us. And we spent a lot of time at her house. And she was the one who actually made me love literature. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm thinking through all this and realizing, oh, that's where that came from. Because she would make us, we were little, probably five. She made both my sister and I memorize poetry. And we would have to say it at the table. Oh, wow. And so, I mean, I still remember, like, one of the reasons I love Anna Green Gables is because, do you remember she does The Highwayman?
Oh, yeah.
That was my poem. Oh. I had to memorize that thing. So I could say along with Anne, you know, Highwayman goes riding over. So we had to do that. And these were not poems that we think of today, not like four stanzas. If you know The Highwayman, it's long, right? We had to do Robert Frost. We had to do. Wow. So all of a sudden I thought, oh, that's probably where I began to really love thing. So to think that she gave her life over to me. And I began to realize all my aunts and uncles were very involved in Jamie and my lives because they were supporting their sister whose daughter had kids that she just couldn't do. Mm-hmm. So that's what the one aunt did. I had another aunt, her sister, who always, she had two boys, and she always had us over to bake. So that's where I learned how to bake. And I love baking. I don't like cooking. But baking I love. And I think that was from my Aunt Jen, who we were always there. And her boys were not around because the boys didn't care about baking. But she always had us around. Interesting enough that those are the boys that introduced me to Bill.
Oh.
Wow. So, yeah. Wow. So my cousins and my aunts and uncles were very, very involved in our life. But I had two of those brothers, who my great uncles. Two of my uncles were not married, and they lived together. They actually took care of their mother until she passed away. But one of them was my softball coach for all the years I played softball. And I played softball for a long time, and he was always there. He showed up every day for practice, and he worked downtown, and he came home, and he would make sure we were at practice. He helped coach on Saturday mornings. He was there bright and early. We're going out to practice again by ourselves. He was the one who bought me every bat and ball that I ever owned. He was the first one to buy me an aluminum bat, which was really a big deal when they first came out. So that presence in my life, and here's the weird thing. So he was a construction worker. He did my baseball, but he also introduced me to theater. So he was the one person in all of those seven siblings that actually loved theater and opera. Mm-hmm. And he would take us to theater and opera. So every theater that was out, everything that was downtown, we went to. Mm-hmm. And he was the one who took us and gave me a love of this. I remember bringing an opera book to junior high. Now think of how geeky that would have been. But I still remember that book. Like, he bought me this great opera book about all the operas. I don't think anybody else could care less. All that to say, I recognized that all these aunts and uncles just pitched in to be the presence that I wouldn't have had otherwise. With a mom that was young and had no idea what she was doing. She had no husband. We were, of course, living with my grandmother. So my grandmother and her husband, who was blind, I mean, talk about everything that could go wrong went wrong. So she was the breadwinner of the house. She had brought us up. And I realized presence was a big deal for me in my aunts and uncles, that they were the ones who actually supplied that presence. And that really gave me my strength and my loves, all of my loves, my gardening came from my grandmother, my love of literature from my one aunt, my love of theater from the other, and my love of softball, particularly, but sports from my uncle. I recognized how I had a lot more than I could imagine, and I feel like I appreciated them, but I took them for granted.
Of course.
You know, and now at this age, you know, it brought tears to my eyes to think, did I ever tell any of them how much that meant to me to have their presence in my life and to recognize, I don't think there was ever a family meeting where they said, okay, we got to get together and take care of Linda's kids.
Right.
It was, that's just what you do. And so I began to think about that as we talk about God's presence, about how important it is to our strength, but how many times we just take it for granted. So that's where we're going with today's lesson. And thinking about that, I would hope that you begin to think about the presences in your life and then translate that to, do I take for granted God's presence in my life and what that means, to that, how much that gives me life? So that's kind of where we're going today as we look at the tabernacle and the temple and all that.
Any of them still alive?
No. They've all passed away.
But their siblings are around. You can tell them.
Not their siblings. Their kids. Their children. And their kids are all, even though officially they're second cousins, they're all my cousins. I consider them all my cousins.
You could tell them.
Yes, well, definitely. I know that I told one or two of them how much I appreciated them. But
show them. I don't think they did it for that.
They didn't. But it's still a reminder of, we so easily take for granted the presence of people's lives in our life, and even more so with God's presence, so much more so.
But it would make them feel good to know that, because I've had people come to me, and under my dad, I considered your dad my father. I hope you don't mind. Or I can remember sitting in your mother's living room listening to stories about Jesus.
You know what, Karen, that's a really good idea, because I've been mulling over having a cousin reunion. I really like that, because none of the cousins have passed away yet, but like obviously if I'm a second cousin, I'm toward the youngest, so you can imagine. And I've been thinking about that, but that would be a great way to invite. I like that.
Well, Jill, and your story makes me chuckle, only because I was with all my cousins last month, and my mom was one of eight, and my mom was the oldest, and we were talking to the children, my cousins who had younger, was one of the next to the youngest, and she was a single mom at the time, and then my cousin, whose dad was my mom's brother, and he, very hard life. So when my uncle passed away years ago, his obituary said he doted on his nieces and nephews, and we were like,
what?
He scared me. It scared me, and I'm like, and just last month did all of my cousins, all of my older cousins, and I learned he doted on two of them. He doted on the two that needed it the most. I was so scared of him, but it was the two, his two siblings that he recognized, and he and his wife didn't have children, and my cousins were like, yeah, Christmas, we couldn't wait until they came down, and I'm like, he never bought me one yet, and my cousin and I, who grew up closest together, I stayed with my grandparents while my parents were, during, they were like, okay, and so it's like families just do what
that what needs to be done. Yeah. And you know, it's funny that you say that because I actually thought to myself, did all my other cousins feel the same way about the aunts and uncles? And we were all very close. We all lived in the same town. So our cousins were our friends. But no, they would say the same thing.
So you might have that conversation.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I think that would be true. I think we were the ones, the two of us were the ones who got doted on because we were in a situation, everybody else had, you know.
But that's what justice is, right?
That's what justice is. That's what justice looks like. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because I didn't need those.
Right, exactly. So it's really fun to think through your life again in view of, as you get older, of what you know better. So that hopefully that story kind of picks up for you your own reminiscings, and then to know that God has put those in your life, that He has actually placed the presence of people in your life, that people that showed up for you when you needed it most. So as we talk about God's faithfulness to covenant, God shows up, right? And He's going to show up for His people progressively, as we've seen. So what I want to do, I gave you a chart if you want to fill out that way. Oh, I just stepped on my computer. I think we'll fill it out with the chart because I think it'll help you see the progression better. But I also gave you kind of the outline too. So it's, you can go with whichever you see better. Lots of people see better with a chart. I see better with an outline, which is why I always do outlines, but I know the chart might help, particularly this time. So let's see how we do this. You know, that's probably kind of silly. We need that computer eventually. But. All right. So.
Jill?
Yeah.
Was your mother sent away? She was pregnant.
No, because she was married.
People in small towns.
But she was married.
At 15.
Oh, okay. But at 15.
Right. She ran to Oklahoma and got married at 15. Okay. It was legal out there.
All right.
Oklahoma, yeah.
Sorry.
So when we look at the Abrahamic covenant, He says to Abraham, I am your shield. I'm with you. So we see, that's the first thing, we see that God is with us, right? When we get to the Mosaic Covenant, we understand, boy, I should bring this just in case.
Isn't there a word for God with us? One word?
Emmanuel. Emmanuel.
We'll get there. What we look at, when we see the Mosaic Covenant, is that God isn't just with us, but God moves with us. And how do we see that?
The cloud.
The cloud, the pillar, right?
Pillar of fire.
The pillar of fire and the cloud. And also the tabernacle, which we'll get into today, how the tabernacle moves with them. So God is with us in the Abrahamic covenant, but then we see God moving with us, right? With His people, I should say. The Davidic covenant, we see God conversing with us. And how do we see that? How do we know God is now involved in a conversation and not just giving His instructions?
Well, David's a listening son, but he also had prophets.
But what else about David?
He's always before battle with
talk to
them. Yeah. Something all of you know. Even beyond that. What did David write?
The Psalms.
What are the Psalms?
Conversations.
Conversations with God. Yeah. So that's here we're getting to the place where Psalms are being used in the liturgy because those are ways we speak, how we speak to God, right? That's what Psalms are, is ways to speak to God. So we know that God is now conversing with His people. We have back and forth now. So we have Him with us, we have Him moving with us, and now we have Him conversing with us. So do you see how the intimacy is growing? Mm-hmm. So with us, it's like He's somewhere around, moving with us. Like now it's not like He didn't just come to visit, but He's going with us. Now He's actually involving us in conversation with Him. He's not talking to us. He's conversing with us. And of course, when we get to the new, we know that God is living with us, right? How do we know that? Jesus, right? Obviously, Jesus is living amongst his people. God himself is living amongst his people. So again, you see this growing intimacy of with us, moving with us, conversing with us, living with us. I mean, it's the same way of any relationship, right? How any relationship grows. You meet somebody somewhere and they're with you for just a short time, right? Mm-hmm. But then they become a friend of some mm-hmm. Intimacy, mm-hmm. and yeah. they begin to move with you. They do things with you, right? Mm-hmm. But then you begin to have these conversations that, like, you share with one another, and you begin to connect with one another at a deeper level. And then, of course, that friend, if he is
your husband,
he eventually lives with you. Sometimes, Annie lives with a friend, Alex, right? Mm-hmm. Some of you, I don't know, I think you're probably the only one, and you're going to be living with
Elizabeth.
You are, Margie!
Yeah. Isn't that cool?
That's so fun!
So that is, isn't it? In fact, talking with Elizabeth about it, she's so excited to be, the way she expressed it was almost like, oh, I get to be me. It's like rest. To be with somebody like Laura Jean, who she's friends with, she works with. It's just this great, great thing. So that living with, that's a bigger intimacy, right? Yeah, you work with her, but now to live with her, that would be different, right? So we have this growing intimacy here. What do you think this last one is? I say new kingdom. It's the growth of the new covenant. What do you think? What should I put in there? What?
In us.
Yeah.
What?
In us. So that's the ultimate intimacy you can get, right? Mm-hmm. So do you see the progression of what God is doing? His presence is with them, but then it moves with them, and then it converses with them, and then it lives with them, and then it lives in us. So that's the progression that God shows us through covenant. So when we see that, we also see the signs of his presence. So the interesting thing, we'll get to it. Signs of his presence are always a sign of light, some kind of light. When we talk about people being in our presence, we all sometimes, oh, I wish I would have remembered what it was. Somebody just said, oh, I just light up when she comes in. You know, that there's my friend. There's the person who's supporting me. I remember, I've told you this story before. When I was a kid, I loved to sing, and my mother said, please don't sing. You have a horrible voice. So, you know, that was squash, and I never did that again. But as an adult, away from my parents and not of my own choosing, they wanted me to sing in the children's play that we did, which was a big thing. And I invited my parents, but I didn't tell them that I was singing. I told them Lissa was in the play, which she was. But they came, and of course I was singing. So it was a musical, and I think they were kind of shocked. But to see them walk in, it was like, wow, they're going to see this now. So that idea of presence bringing light, this opening up. So the signs of light in the Abrahamic covenant, what would you think? What
were the stars in the sky, like
you're just going to send them.
The fire?
When they walk through the burning bush.
Yeah. This is Abraham, not
Moses.
Fire and cloud. Those are the signs of his presence, right? In the Abrahamic covenant, the cutting covenant. So we know he was present because the fire and the cloud walked through the pieces. So we see fire is always light, right? And cloud is actually, you know what clouds are, right? Just in the physical world, what a cloud is.
Water.
Water.
And how do we see that it's water?
It's
reflecting light.
Oh.
No science there, obviously. So fire and cloud is the sign of his presence in the Abrahamic covenant. We get to the Mosaic covenant. What's the sign of his presence there?
Moses' face shining.
Burning.
But why does it shine?
Because it came the glory of the Lord.
And what was on the mountain?
Presence.
The Lord's presence.
The cloud.
It's the same thing. Fire and cloud.
I see
the
cloud.
Oh, slow on the uptake today.
Yeah.
I was like, how did you enjoy
this? Yeah. So remember, Moses went up where there was fire and cloud, right? Mm-hmm. In fact, it says God's presence showed up as fire and cloud, and there was lightning and thunder. So we have the fire and cloud as well in Moses. So when they, I think the translation is smoke for Abraham, but it's a cloud still, fire and cloud there. When we get to the Davidic covenant, so this is going to be a little bit harder. So when we get the Davidic covenant, and actually some of the Mosaic covenant as well, and when we talk about the Davidic covenant, it isn't just David, it's David and Solomon and beyond, right? In the temple that Solomon builds, God ascends down into the temple, right? Mm-hmm. And how do we know that?
The Shekinah glory.
The Shekinah glory, which is a cloud. So again, we have the cloud of glory. So we often call that the Shekinah glory. But that's not a biblical word. It's a rabbinic word. So the rabbis looked at that and said, oh, that's, we're going to call that the Shekinah glory, so that we have this idea that it's not just a cloud, but it's a cloud of God's presence. So though it's not biblical, the rabbis, after the writing of the Old Testament, came up with that. So fire and cloud, cloud of glory. And glory, the word glory actually means the light of God's presence. So, again, we have fire, cloud. We have all this idea. But notice that now we have it in one place, the cloud of glory. So that's kind of what is happening in the Davidic covenant. When we get to the new covenant, what do you think I should put there?
Jesus.
Yeah, but
he's the light of the world.
Okay, he's the light of the world, so we could put that.
The star in the sky.
I was thinking that, yeah, the that times of fire. So,
that's what we got here, right? How about Hebrews 1?
Oh, yeah.
What does it call Jesus?
The light of men. Radiance of God, yeah.
Radiance of God's glory. Hebrews 1:3 calls Jesus the radiance of glory. Now understand that these words, the reason that the New Testament uses those words is because of this, right? They know the pattern that's going down here, and they understand that the radiance of God's glory is the same as the cloud of glory, is the same as the fire of glory, fire and cloud. Do you understand that? You see that throughout Scripture, the words they use are purposeful. They're pulling you along the story so you understand not only is his relationship becoming more intimate, his signs of his presence becomes more and more vivid to us, right? It's very vivid in the fire and cloud, but we can almost mistake that, right? But as it becomes this way, it becomes more and more vivid. Now it's Jesus called the radiance of his glory. And then, of course, when we get to the new covenant expanding into the kingdom, that's our time, and I'm not even going to ask you to go here. In 2 Corinthians, it says, we go from glory to glory. In other words, from this glory to increasing glory. It keeps on expanding more and more and more as more and more people come into the kingdom. So we see, that's that whole passage. What actually that passage will do, it will take us from here all the way back. Because it'll say, just like Moses, when he was in the wilderness and he had to veil his face, we have unveiled faces, and we are going from glory to glory. And so it pulls all this in to recognize that the sign of his presence is in a fire and a cloud, in a cloud of glory, in Jesus being the radiance of his glory, and then in us. Right? So we see this, again, these go together, this more and more intimacy and more vividness of his presence. And this is one of those things that we have to remember presence here, but presence in here, we so often still live as if his presence is here rather than here, right? And that's where we're trying to get to. That's where all the covenants are getting to, is God is not going to remain out there, but it's going to take us understanding who he is out there, coming closer and closer and closer in. So when we look at his increased intimacy and the signs of light, the signs of his presence, right? We also want to look at his presence in spaces. So what? How did he show then? He didn't just show in light, in forms of light. He also showed in actual physical spaces his presence. And so when we have Abraham, when he cuts covenant with Abraham, does anybody know where he takes Abraham to cut that covenant?
I would guess he takes him to Jerusalem.
He takes him outside, which is pretty unusual for you to even think about the fact that when he first spoke to Abraham about cutting the covenant, he was inside, and he said, Abraham, come outside with me. Mm-hmm. And so what we have then is this idea of God saying, the space that I dwell in is not a space that man designs. It's a space that God designs. And so the outside looks backward toward, where was the very first place that God resided?
In Eden,
right? In that garden sanctuary. And now he's saying, we're going back there. So he starts with outside, the space that I've designed, not that man has designed. When we get to the mosaic, now he says, now I want you to make a space for me that I design, but you're going to construct. And what is that?
The tabernacle, right?
The tent of meeting. So we have here the tent of meeting, or what we call the tabernacle. And I think that's when we're going to go switch gears a little bit and talk about that tabernacle. So you can probably go to your outline, which will make it a little bit easier for you. You can write it into the graph. This is why I don't like graphs, because there's never enough space, right, to write things. So when we're talking about the tabernacle, which is what we have here, right? We have this idea of this tabernacle that God asks him to design. Because, and I should have put this here. What is it in here there? Oh, yeah. Because God is Yahweh, the self-existent one, he doesn't dwell in a place that God that man designs, but he designs. Because he is the self-existent one, he is outside of man's ideas. We can't put him in a box made of our own imagination. And this is right from the very beginning. We have problems with this, right? Because we want to come up with an idea of what he's like. Rather, he's going to tell us what he's like. It's kind of like the question I gave you at the beginning. Have you read a book and then seen a movie? Mm-hmm. What happens when you've read a book and then seen a movie? How do you feel about the movie, usually?
Disappointed.
Disappointed. Why?
It looks different than what you imagined.
It looks different than what you imagined, right? Because you constructed in your head a whole world. Right. And you get to the movie, and that world is different. It's according to someone else's world, right? And so that's why God first takes him outside. You have to understand, this is going to be my construction, not your idea. And we've got to start there, because we so many times want to put God in our box, right? You know what? I'll give you a box, but it's going to be the box I design. And so we get to the mosaic, and we know under the mosaic from our places here that God is holy. God is Yahweh, but then God is holy. And because he's holy, he's going to need a holy place, right? If he's going to dwell with his people, he's going to need a holy place. That holy place has to be functional for why he's dwelling there. And why he's dwelling there is so that he and humanity can live together, can meet together, right? That's why it's called a tent of meeting. This is where heaven and earth intersect, where they actually come together and God and humanity can actually meet together. So that's the function. So the place that he makes the place that he designs is going to have to be functional for that. It's going to have to be a place where a designated space where they can meet. So it's not like, oh, I'll just meet you wherever. It's not like how you talk to your friends. Oh, I'll meet you at this Starbucks, or I'll meet you at that Starbucks, or I'll meet you at another Starbucks. It's a very specific place that they meet all the time. So there's never a question, right? Have you ever come up with an idea of meeting someone and you say, let's go meet the Starbucks? And have you ever showed up at the wrong Starbucks?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So almost all of us, right?
75th.
Right, exactly. Right, exactly. But if you regularly meet, you know where you're going, right? It's always the same place over and over and over again. That was the whole point, is there's going to be a designated space where the humanity and God meet together.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So did God want his presence to be restricted to this designated space, or was it really his intention to be more present with them, and man kind of put him in that space?
So let's get about three pieces down and we'll see why it's restricted.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about it expanding. But it also, since they were on their way to somewhere, the space wasn't just a designated place. So it couldn't be 75th and Napier, right? It had to be a specific building. But then that building was going to have to be able to be moved, right? Because they're on a journey, and it's the journey that he's asked them to go on. So not only is it a designated space, but that designated space has to be on wheels in some way, some form, right? It's got to be able to be moved. And so, obviously, a portable place, at that point, a tent works well, right? A tent is very portable. And so this idea of a tent being very portable. Now, when I say very portable, it's not like our pop-up tents.
No.
Right? It's a lot. It's a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. But it is movable. It's not like an edifice that you put into concrete. So you can put it down. So even for this, when I take this apart, it'll be a while to take it apart, and it'll be a long while for me to put it back together. I don't have a place to store this, right? So I actually have to take the whole thing apart, and then I have to put it all back together again. So it takes time. And it takes specific ways of putting it together. But it is portable. Right? I can take it anywhere. I have taken it many places. This, by the way, somebody asked. Let's see. Christian's 33. So Christian and I made this when he was in high school. For, I don't think Naperville Center still has this, but they used to have a cell. What was it called? Something. They had a kind of an art show that it was, you know, a judged art show, but it wasn't just art. It was all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And we made that for that. We just thought that would be kind of fun to do something a little, push the boundaries there a little. He won first place for it.
Oh,
So it was really fun to see that they appreciated that. But we also made it for the fact that I'm going to be able to use it for all my Bible studies. I have. So. So we have, he's going to need a sacred space. So he needs a place that is designated, right, for meeting. He needs a place that is portable, but he also needs a sacred place because he's holy, right? Mm-hmm. He needs a place where it's all about relationship with him. So he needs this sacred space. And here is where we're going to answer Robin's question. Why did it need to have boundaries? Why do you think?
Because we're not atoned for it yet.
Yeah, we're not holy, right? Israelites aren't holy. And what would happen if a holy God comes into their midst without boundaries? They would die. Exactly. And so God had to have boundaries for protection for the people. So not like, I want to keep you out. I want to keep you safe. So very different than we think of, right? That's why the boundaries are there, is to keep him safe. And in fact, the fact that they aren't holy is actually a piece of the fact that they don't always pay attention to him. And that's how we began the lesson, right? I don't always recognize the people who show up in my life.